Coming up this Saturday morning on Gesundheit with Jacobus, different topics are on the table for discussion, including why blood tests don't save more lives, omega-3 intake can lower our mortality risk, and an update on the latest opioid crisis. I invite you to tune in, learn, and participate. If anything else tickles your interest, bring it to my attention as well.
It's Gesundheit with Jacobus.
Welcome to Gesundheit with Jacobus, Health Talk Radio, integrating allopathic and all-natural medicine one show at a time. Here is your host, Jacobus Hollewine.
What a special day it is. Good morning to all of you. I much appreciate you tuning in today. I'm looking forward to all the topics we have to discuss on this program where we discuss, as you very well know, health, healing, and healthy lifestyles. We're not here to diagnose, treat, or cure. That's not the purpose. The purpose has always been education, information, hopefully a little entertainment. The experts usually talk about whatever they can, books they have written, passions they have, the work they do, or they've done for a long time, or a change of work that they're doing in a field that I think is very interesting. Well, we have quite a few topics. It is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, which is something has always intrigued me. And I've always been fascinated with that whole endeavor from NASA and Gemini Project and even the space shuttle. It just amazes me what we're able to do and the people are involved. I want to touch on that a little bit later in the show, and I hope that you will join me for that as well. Let me lay out what the thoughts were for me today to talk about. And of course, it helps if I find my notes. And let me see here. So the topics I thought we'll discuss is what I also mentioned in the promo that you just heard before the show. One is called Why Blood Tests Don't Save More Lives. And that was an article that was published in the Life Extension magazine just recently, why blood tests don't save more lives. Now, I have had my issues with blood testing over the years that I've learned that some of these ranges that are given are confusing to people. They don't know what it means. But at the same time, we are being told that something is normal, when in reality, the symptoms indicate that you are having a problem. So is there something wrong with the range, or is there something wrong with you? And so something like that I would like to discuss with you. There was also an interesting article about the fact that omega-3, there was testing done that omega-3 fish oil can actually improve from mortality. And then I would like to talk with you about a report that just was released about the opioid crisis. There was an article in the Boston Chronicle, but I dug a little deeper and found some other interesting articles that elaborate on the findings that you were able to read in the Boston Chronicle that was called this last July 18, Thursday. It's called Stunning Scale. Data shows flood of opioids across the United States, many of them generics. And it is just amazing when I started counting and calculating and put some numbers together, put my pencil to the paper, so to say, to figure out some numbers, you will be astounded by the devastating effect of opioids, but also by the sheer number of how many pills does that mean the average American is getting. Or actually, there is even one for Montana, how many we have had. Now, interesting thing with this is that the opioid numbers only range from 2006 through 2012, so a seven-year period. Somehow the judge who ordered the release of these numbers said that 2013 and 14 were not allowed to be released at this point. So obviously we are already 7 years later, and we all have heard that this whole opioid crisis debacle, not a debacle, it is definitely a crisis, let me call it that way. Now, some political parties may say it's a fabricated crisis, and that's fine. We know. But at the same time, let's just look at numbers during this show and give you some insights so that we have a better understanding about the vastness. And for those of you who have to take opioids for one reason or the other, I totally understand and I sympathize. I also want to say is that when your use for opioids or needs for opioids means that you have to meet somebody in a dark alley and exchange some pills for some cash, then we really should talk, because that means that it's out of control, and that maybe there are some other options and solutions out there for you where you can find some a happy medium, so to say. So these are some of the topics I would like to discuss. Hopefully you're doing well. It is a beautiful drive coming to the studio. It's a stark blue sky, and it looks like we're going to have a wonderful day in the neighborhood, so to say, and wherever your neighborhood is. Let's talk about the blood testing. It was not maybe exactly what I had expected that the article was going to be about, but it was very, very interesting. There is a gentleman by the name of William Falloon, and William Falloon is the editor of the, I think he's the editor of the magazine Life Extension Foundation, and he brought some very interesting things to my attention about this, about what we need to test for, because let me just say it out straight. I think that generic testing that is being done by physicians doing an annual physical sadly does not include some very important testing that would give us a much better insight in potential dangers for heart health or for other symptoms that are just simply not tested. We do know that a vast majority of people is suffering from thyroid problems. Thyroid hormones are just not part of a regular panel. We see that there is a very clear understanding about the lipids, the fats that are being tested for cholesterol, because the medical society is making cholesterol the number one indicator for potential heart disease, cardiovascular problems, strokes, and heart attacks. But years of research have already been published about the fact that cholesterol is not the enemy here. Cholesterol is our friend. Our liver makes cholesterol, so it is important for us to utilize and respect the fact that our liver makes cholesterol, and we should not use medication to shut the cholesterol production up. We need to make sure that cholesterol is used well and that we understand what these things mean. Now, this article is called Why Blood Tests Are Not Saving More Lives, and I go through it, and you will learn some new things that you may have never heard about, and I think it will be interesting. If you have pen and paper, write some things down and learn. Back in the 1950s, a scientist uncovered the link between LDL cholesterol and atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. Critics argued that heart attacks occurred in some people who did not have excess LDL. What was not so, critics argued that heart attacks occurred in some people who did not have excess LDL. So when your doctor looks at your blood test and says your LDL is high, then it's elevated, so we got to lower the LDL. There are different players. And just to give you some numbers here, just to let you know, you have your HDL, which we consider good cholesterol, high-density lipoprotein, HDL, high-density lipoprotein. We call it the good cholesterol. It is the cholesterol that is important for heart health, and it is also important for our immune system. The levels that I feel are important to notice is that you are, if your level is between 35 and 45 or lower than 35 than 45, you are in the danger zone. That is not good. You got to bring it up. There are different ways to bring it up. That's another story. Now, when you talk about your LDL, I have said on this program, and for those of you who haven't heard, LDL, in my opinion, is very important because it indicates our body going to work for us, our system going to work for us, and in any time, our body is suffering from either an injury, an infection, or inflammation. If you are inflamed, if you have just been subject to an injury, if you have an infection, so let's say you work out and you hurt your muscles, trust me, your body will produce more LDL cholesterol simply to patch the holes, to patch the damage. Just like a scab on your skin is protecting you from further infections after you have cut yourself. So the scab will be there and will stay there until the stem cells inside our body are going in to fix the damage that was created by the cut. And so once that is done, the scab literally falls off, and you were all amazed that our body is completely healed. So yes, we may not like the looks of a scab, but that is what it does. And LDL cholesterol will be produced by the liver to put a scab inside the blood vessel where damage is, where leakage is, where there's inflammation, and it needs to protect that area so that stem cells can go in and fix it. Once it is fixed, the LDL cholesterol literally will lift up, and will be removed through the lymphatic system. It is not the body's goal to hold on to LDL cholesterol after it has done its job. So if you have elevated LDL, you need to find out, why do I have elevated LDL? Can you pinpoint it? Is your body going through something? Have you just done tremendous work in the backyard and strained your back and you're walking kind of bent over? Or did you hurt yourself in an injury? Did you fall down, break your neck? Who knows? Whatever it is, you have damage, your LDL will go up. So still, when we look at numbers for LDL, my suggestion is that if you are less than 70, that will be awesome. Okay? But this is not after you take medication. This is LDL naturally occurring before you take any medication. If your LDL is between 70 and 90, I would say that is a pretty good level. It's pretty good. If you are above 100, I would say that probably indicates you have either an infection, an inflammation, or an injury. So the three I's, infection, inflammation, injury, in my opinion, are directly related to LDL production. And then, of course, we have the triglycerides. And the triglycerides, for me, are very important because it indicates the amount of sugars that we eat, carbohydrates, fruits, vegetables, pastas, cookies, cakes, chips, salsa, some cheese, nuts, some nuts, anything that is a sugar, a carbohydrate, that is not per se a fat or a protein, is usually some kind of a sugar. So when we eat those, they go through the digestive tract. A bunch of them will end up in the bloodstream, and that means that the blood cells have to do something with it. So they take it to the cells, and the cells say, well, I got enough sugar, so I don't want any more. And it literally shuts the door. And the blood cell goes, well, what am I going to do with it? I'm not going to go back to the liver and carry all the sugar in my backpack. So it literally wants to dump it in the bloodstream. Now, there are fat cells always present in the bloodstream, floating around, And they say, you know what? Give it to us. We'll hold on to the sugar, because if Jacobus tomorrow is going to skip some meals, or he is in a hurry and he has no time to eat, or he's going crazy because he thinks he's gaining too much weight, he doesn't eat. So then we'll simply release that sugar back into the bloodstream, and then the cells can absorb it at that point because they have burned through their sugar. They need some. So that's very interesting. But if we eat the same routine every day that we do all the time, then obviously we never have that extra need for that release of sugar from the fat cells in the bloodstream. Keep in mind, therefore, that when we eat more sugars and carbohydrates than we need, they get stored in fat cells, and that over time, sugar and fat can create acidity, inflammation in the bloodstream. So some people have chronic inflammation, can't figure it out. One of the many things that you often hear is you gotta stop eating sugars. Now, many people don't understand what sugars are. And as I just said, anything that is a carbohydrate, anything that is a fruit or a vegetable or anything like that, by all means, it is it eventually will turn into a sugar. So triglycerides measure the amount of sugar in the bloodstream that is not accepted by the cells and is therefore stored in temporarily in fat cells that float in the bloodstream. And the higher that number, the more sugar you contain. Now, let's talk about this. My suggestion is that if you have less than 70 on your triglycerides, that is great. If you are between 70 and 80, that is good. Now, if you get over 85, and this goes back to my days when I would talk to Ellie Cullen on my radio show, a phlebotomist who had worked with blood for more than 45 years, she would say, if you go over 85, you are increasing your risk for developing either hypoglycemia or diabetes. Now, keep in mind, over 85 on triglycerides, you increase your risk for diabetes and hyperglycemia. Now, let's take a look at what a test says as a reference range. It says zero. How can you be less than zero? So if you're less than zero, you're low. Well, you show me somebody who can be less than zero. I've never seen it. But they say zero to 150. What kind of range is that? And then there are some tests today that say more like 30 to 200. So there are people with a triglycerides of 195 who are being told they're in the normal range. That is absolutely pathetic. These people are having a problem and they know it. But you go to the doctor and the doctor says everything is in the normal range. Well, what does it mean? Come on, doc. Look at it. It's at the high end of your normal. You better go take a look at it. So for many people, they get very confusing and very conflicting reports when they go to the doctor to get their blood tested, especially for the cholesterol. So many doctors do not even care so much about the triglycerides, but they look at the LDL, they look at the HDL, and they look at the ratio, which is understandable. But if your HDL is over 85, it's excellent. So I said earlier, 35 to 45 is dangerous. In my opinion, on the HDL, if you get over 60, you're safe. And if you can get your HDL, your good cholesterol, over 84, 85, you're just never going to die. So that's great. So if you can get that, and again, there are several ways to get to that point, but we need to test more things. For example, we need to test for the LDL, small or large particles. We call it particle size. It is very important that we understand the particle size of bad cholesterol, LDL. Now, simple question. What do you think is more dangerous in the bloodstream? Small particles or large particles? I think most of you will say small particles because they don't seem so dangerous. Well, the problem is small particle size on LDL cholesterol is dangerous because they can stick to any crevice, any chip, any bump that is in the bloodstream, and they have a certain stickiness where the large particles bounce around like beach balls. They just don't, the larger, they don't get stuck anywhere. So small particle size, if you have a small particle size of 100, you may be at a higher risk of cardiovascular problems than if you have 135 or 140 on your LDL of large particle size. Anyway, when we come back, I'm going to talk more about this article, about the blood testing, and I do hope you stay with me all the way through. We're going to have a good time. We'll be right back.
Integrative medicine, the future of healthcare. Every Saturday morning, right here from 8 to 11 a.m.